Welcome to Inside Impella Transport Talks, your co-pilot for training. I'm Shane Turner, and I'm so glad you're here. As members of Abiomed's critical care transport team, we know that every transport is a lifeline, and every moment counts in our mission to recover hearts and save lives. Today, we're going to discuss a unique challenge facing transport programs, how to stay sharp when Impella cases are less frequent. Joining me is flight paramedic and clinical-based educator Dustin McKeel, who's here to shed light on how they're tackling this issue in Memphis, Tennessee, amidst limited access to ground critical care options in the inner city. Find out how innovative training methods, hands-on cadaver labs, and real case studies are helping their crews gain confidence and experience. Plus, what is the impact of the transfer of care checklist and the real need behind efficient preparation and packaging of equipment? Let's talk. Dustin, what makes your program unique in regards to Impella transports?
I think one thing that I know from a personal experience would be that we have shorter distances with the Impella transports than maybe some other services, just due to the inner city of Memphis, primarily, that we transport to. So we go from one smaller hospital within Memphis to the bigger mothership hospital of Memphis as well. And it's only about a 5-minute flight time.
So that's really interesting that they utilize Air Medical for something that's so short. Can you kind of describe that dynamic and what the landscape looks like with options for critical care transport there in Memphis?
Sure. Mostly Memphis is run by Memphis Fire. They're 911. To my understanding, they don't do a lot of transfers and emergency transports, and the ground services are kind of limited within inner city Memphis, believe it or not. So, they utilize air medical transport for the critical patients that need to get to definitive care.
Yeah, that's pretty unique. You know, you think air medical usually is called when, you know, you need an expedient transport, right? Like time is of the essence. We're going deep into the rural communities, could be a 2+ hour drive, but we can rotor there, you know, 35 minutes or something. So it's unique that in that landscape there, you know, you're truly being called for your critical care services, because it's not so much that the distances are great, but there's not really any critical care options by ground, right?
Right. Correct. You may have a ALS truck, but you know, they might not have a ventilator on it, or they might not have the equipment in order to get them there.
So this has my gears turning. You know, when we go out and do these transport trainings about Impella, oftentimes I find myself in conversations of, hey, I have to manage this patient for an hour and a half. You know, we go to some of these programs that are fixed wing, and they may have them for multiple hours, right? They're crossing multiple state lines. But it's this could be good. I mean, a 5-minute transport. So we get to the sending facility. We're spending a good amount of time at the bedside. We got to prepare. We've got a package. There's multiple pieces of equipment. But this is a completely different aspect of care, because I only have this patient for 5 minutes, you know, and I get it. Like 5 minutes is skids up to skids down, right? Total patient contact time. We're still providing what, an hour?
45 minutes of patient care.
Yeah. So talk to me about that 5 minutes in flight. I mean, there's a lot of clinical priorities, right? You're in, and I would imagine, you know, Bravo airspace there in Memphis.
Right.
So you're probably eyes out almost the entire time. The pilot probably has you isolated because he's talking to ATC. Mm-hmm. You're going across town. Like, kind of describe what these flights look like.
I think over the past years, you know, we've kind of learned that with these short flights, we need to make sure everything is packaged up, good to go. That way we're not really having to deal with a lot in flight. That way we can be eyes out and we can be on the alert, you know, but also maintaining the critical care needs that the patient has while monitoring them as well. So it can be, you know, a little lackadaisy, I guess you could say, as far as, oh, we only got a 5-minute flight, but within those 5 minutes, who knows, right? So we just need to make sure while we're loading and unloading and getting the patient transported within those 5 minutes per se, we need to make sure that everything is still good to go.
Yeah, I can understand that being a hectic 5 minutes. But, you know, I'm sitting here thinking, when we prep for a transport, you know, that's always the decision the flight crew makes, right? Like, what can we do now? Right. And what can we do en route, right? And some things have to be done now, right? Some things are time sensitive. Hey, I have to secure this airway right now. I have to get additional vascular access, right? But if we're at these interfacilities and we have the resources around us and we're making sure, you know, everything's squared away, we get a good report, it's almost like, do you take longer to prepare on these shorter flights? Because I'm trying to put myself in this situation. I've never flown in an area where I had transports that short.
Right.
You know, when I was flying, my average transport 40 plus minutes, depending. Right.
Right.
So we often would find ourselves really not spending a whole lot of time on scene or at the sending because we knew we had all this time en route. You know, I could reorganize my lines. I could flip through the chart. I could look at advanced imaging. I could look at labs. You know, I knew if I needed to draw an ISTAT or do something else, I had time and route. But if you're only with them for 5 minutes, like, how do you even begin to prioritize, like, what you're doing?
I think that goes back to, like I was saying before, you know, we have to maybe spend a little bit longer ground time because we don't have that time to do in the air. But you don't want to spend too long. You know, the person's going for obvious reasons, if they have an Impella implanted. We usually try to take priority over what the patient needs at bedside and then prioritize from there. We've had great help with the Impella reps at the bedside, and they've been wonderful. So having everything we need right there before we go, that way we don't have to worry about, oh, I need to check this or I need to check that or I forgot to, you know, do this. Because usually, like I said, once we package them up, get them loaded, I mean, we're up. We're calling our inbound report as soon as we can get at a safe altitude, and we're there in 4 to 6 minutes usually.
Yeah, it sounds very busy. So it also gets me thinking, so, you know, if you – Let's compare you to a program that has 30-minute transport times, okay? If you have 5 Impella transports, that's 25 minutes total Impella managing time in the air, right?
Mm-hmm.
Compared to this program that has 30, if they have 5 transports, they have 150 minutes.
Right.
So comparatively, your time with these patients or your exposure to Impella-supported patients or your opportunity to manage or even find yourself in, you know, adverse events with, you know, alarm conditions or suction events or, you know, insert, you know, kind of problematic things here, your time with that is much, much smaller. So how do you guys stay competent or proficient at something that, I mean, A, already is a low frequency event, but even within those frequencies, your duration is so short.
That's one thing that, you know, kind of struggles, especially with the shorter transports or, the area I'm in is not within Memphis. So if we get the call to Memphis, that means that that base who's based out of Memphis is actually out on a flight or something. So we may not get all the Impella transports that a certain other base gets. So it is important for us to stay up to date on that competency. And I think, you know, one video you watch a year is really not sufficient. So what we're doing this year with our cadaver lab, of course, you know, you're coming and giving us extra training. And I think that extra training really does help, but also the training with when things do go wrong is very important as well. Not just when things are always right, because they're not always right.
Yeah, I'm sitting here listening to you, Dustin, and I'm like, you know, man, this is so unique, 5 minute transport times. But then you said something that really caught my attention. You said, well, we're not even the primary base. Like,
right.
we're only getting called if they're out. So as far as number of transports, again, already low frequency, already short duration, but now you're like, you're the one that's on deck.
Correct.
You're second and third string when it comes to who's the order that's going to get them. So that's an even further lower frequency than, you know, the average program, right? So that's not unique at all. So, you know, so as we get out and do these transport trainings, this is a very similar narrative to what I hear from a lot of programs. And I really don't see a difference if they're super rural, if they're metropolitan, if they're community-based, if they're hospital-based, because it's kind of all over the map. And I think generically, we don't do as many of these as we would like to be comfortable, right?
Right.
So you learn a new skill, right? You've got a brand new video laryngoscope. And there's, you know, we can get into the data on how many times it takes to be muscle memory and how much times it takes to be proficient and then mastery level and all this. Like, we don't get anywhere near that with Impella if you're doing one a year. And that may be one a year for your base,
right?
Let alone the individual provider, right? So we extrapolate that down even further. You may be, as an individual, one every 2 or 3 years, depending.
Right.
As more data and evidence comes to light that, you know, really the company is focusing on this hub and spoke model. And kind of what that means is, if I have a big center, right? I have, like you described, the mothership. I've got this tertiary care. I've got this, you know, every subspecialty known to man, big hospital. And then I have all these satellite and feeder hospitals. You know, what the evidence is showing us is that the real mortality benefit is recognizing cardiogenic shock early and intervening early. And specifically for us, it means implanting Impella early when it's warranted versus letting the patient get treated with conventional methods. Then they get transferred to a bigger center because they realize they need escalation in therapy, and then they get put on support. So we as a company are targeting these smaller hospitals that are already doing cardiac catheterizations. And we're saying, hey, when you see these patients and we recognize it early, let's help you. And we get this Impella support, and then we move them to the big center. So I say all that because that means transports are on the rise. So year over year, there's an increase in the number of transports compared to what we did previously.
Right.
So even if you are seeing these low numbers now, I don't foresee they'll stay low forever, you know, based on kind of the model we're working at here. So when we get out there, and to your point, yeah, if you watch a video one time a year, that's not enough, right? I mean, I'm biased, obviously, but the AIC is extremely intuitive. Like, there are so many just engineered controls and built-in design to make the clinician's job easier. I mean, we have on-screen menus and we have guides, and every alarm has at least 2 or 3, you know, troubleshooting tips or techniques, or, you know, information that will help you kind of mitigate the situation. But I feel you, because I've worked at places where they said, hey, we're doing some Impella training this year, and then I do a self-guided module online. Now, it's good information, but it's a high-level summary at best, right?
Right.
So to kind of segue into what you described we're doing with your program is, yeah, we're coming out there and we're doing this stepwise. Like, hey, I want you to get this online training because I want to kind of knock the cobwebs off if we haven't talked about cardiovascular and hemodynamic stuff in a while. But then I'm going to come there in person, and then we're going to have, you know, 90 minutes, 2 hours of didactic, you know, high-level overview cardiogenic shock, why the device is implanted, how the device works. But really what we focus on is just the things that transport providers need. So it's like, hey, you could get in the weeds and talk for hours. You could talk for days about how the Impella works and total patient management and all these other concepts. But really, we could put in a small bucket the things that are actually relevant for transport folks, and that's what we're doing. And this is stepwise because you do the online learning to kind of tee it up, pre-coursework, if you will. We do the in-person module, and you get hands-on with the AIC, and I think that's huge. So, Dustin, coming from someone who doesn't do a lot of these, is that AIC like anxiety-inducing? Is that something that makes you nervous?
I think it all will depend on the layout of, you know, kind of how it is. Is it a bunch of alarms going off? Is it a bunch of things saying, hey, you need to check this or do this? That could be a little anxious for, you know, certain providers. If you leave it up to me to just read numbers and to make my own decision, if I'm only doing one transport every 2 years, I may not recognize that. So the machine absolutely could be beneficial in saying, hey, something's not right here. Let's check it out. And I think with the additional training that you're talking about, going out, getting into the meat and potatoes of everything with these providers as well as these tertiary hospitals, I think would be absolutely 100% great.
Yeah, and you brought up a good point. Yeah, just because it's a smart machine, it tells you what to do. But if you don't even have the concepts or just the terminology down, yeah, again, you're still just as lost, right? I think that's the beauty about this training department that's just for transport programs is when we go out there to do these classes, we're bringing this AIC. We're bringing demo pumps. You're going to put your hands on the actual catheters so you can see how the TUI Bors valve works to lock the catheter in place. And you can get mock groin side assessments and things like this. Because I think what we noticed is very rarely do we get out to these transport programs and discover that the provider's anxiety or uncomfortability falls in a clinical topic. Like, these patients are very complex clinically, but you guys are sharp. You take care of sick people all the time. The anxiety lies because they're like, hey, I've never even seen this thing in person. Right. I've only seen it on the online module, right? And it's like, once you get your hands on it and you start pushing buttons, you're like, oh, this thing really is easy to use. Yeah. Oh, that's what they meant by purge cassette? Oh, this makes sense now. You know, and it's just like, oh, if I think of the purge just like it's a single channel IV pump, oh, this makes so much more sense. All right, this isn't this big scary thing I thought it was. And, you know, and same thing with loading and unloading, right? Like, we're used to taking patients that have multiple pieces of equipment, right? We're managing multiple IV pumps. We've got the ventilator. We're managing our lines and trying not to make a mess. And then you add the Impella in there and it's like, it becomes the big shiny thing in the room, right? So then we do these trainings and it's like, no, take this and put it in your space. See how it secures in your aircraft. Yeah. See what it looks like when it's on the side of the ambulance stretcher, right? Like, there's all these different components to it. And then you go from there, you know, and then what we're doing that's interesting with your program too is, like you mentioned, the cadaver lab. And you're like, wait a minute, Impella and cadaver lab? Now, as a company, they do some really cool things with perfused cadavers, and you can see, you know, the mechanics of the valves opening and closing and understand fluid dynamics and preload and afterload and all these things. But what we're talking about doing at yours, spoiler alert, right, is we're going to have your medical director implant one in the groin, right, and it's just a short catheter, but you're going to see how you get access to that common femoral artery. You're going to see what a groin site looks like. You can see how it's forward sutured, and then we have to pad the void to maintain the angle of entry. And then we're going to take another catheter, again, just a short piece of it, and he's going to do a window on the aortic arch so you can see how it goes across the aortic valve. And he's going to remove the anterior wall of the LV so you can understand what that catheter looks like when it's sitting in that left ventricle, right? Because it's all these concepts and things that we think we understand, right? Like, but then you actually see the anatomy and you're in like, oh,
yeah,
well, this isn't theoretical knowledge anymore. Like, this is really relevant. Like, I have a clear understanding. And I think that's how most transport providers operate, right? Like,
yeah,
I can read something all day long. Sure. Give me a graph. Okay. Yeah. I read the whole owner's manual of the ventilator. I get it. But give me a set of pig lungs. Let me see how they inflate, right? So it's the same thing here. Like, give me this AIC and let me push a couple buttons and see what I can break or try to break. Right. And then realize like, oh, I actually really have to try to screw something up here. It's not going to let me do it accidentally. And I think, at least from my experience with it, that's what really bolsters that confidence. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Give me a transmission and tell me how a transmission works. I won't know. And then open it up and see how the gears and everything turn. Then you get a better picture. So it's a open window into how the machine actually works. Yeah, absolutely.
100% agree. And that's the nice thing about, you know, the education and training that we can offer is it's not just a canned product. We're not just a 40-slide PowerPoint, right? We're going to these programs and we're saying, hey, give me some context. You guys doing one or two a year? You doing one or two a week? Like, where's our comfort level? What's our experience? What's our exposure? And then we kind of tailor that to what the program needs.
I will say that with the short transports that we have, I know in the few that I've done where it's been that little 5-minute flight, the Impella rep has been at bedside. And once we get them packaged up, ready to go, you know, the Impella's rep's like, okay, y'all good? Y'all got it? We're like, yeah. And they're like, I'm going to head out. So when they head out, they go ahead and get in their car. They drive 15 minutes across the town. And sometimes they have literally been at the bedside in the ICU waiting on us to get there. And, I mean, I just think that in itself is very confident in knowing that – hey, if something does go wrong, they're there.
Yeah, that's wild that they'd beat you there because your yeah. distances are so short. But you're right. That's a great resource to have, you know, and every market looks different. You know, we strive to have a clinical consultant there at sending or receiving, mm-hmm. right? But just it depends on, you know, the kind of the lay of the land there. But yeah, that's something I think that you could instill some confidence in providers that don't do these a lot is like you have resources, you know, and even if that clinical consultant is not at bedside, the staff has their phone number. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're probably on the phone with them already, right? And even, and you know, let's do even further down worst case scenario. They're not at bedside. They're driving to the hospital, but they're in an area of poor cell signal. You've got a clinical support center. You know, we have that 1-800 number that we put on all of our right. devices. It's marketed very, very well. Those healthcare experts that staff the clinical support center, they're there for us. Like if you have any question whatsoever, you know, and I've even gone so far to advocate to other crews because I did this when I was transporting them. I'd call them and say, hey, I don't really remember what I'm supposed to be looking at on this screen. I had some guy from Abiomed come out 6 months ago, gave me an hour long class and he told terrible jokes and then he left. Like, can you remind me, like, are these waveforms supposed to look like this? Do I want pulsatility in my motor current? You know, like you can just ask right. him these things. And another cool benefit, and not every implanting center subscribes to it, but we do offer a service called Impella Connect, you know, and that's remote through secure Wi-Fi. That's remote monitoring of that AIC. So if you're at an institution that has that, you can call them up and not only can they help you, they can see exactly what you're looking at.
Neat.
And they can say, oh, Dustin, yeah, no problem at all, sir. So if you notice at the top, that black area, that there's nothing there, that means there's no alarms. So right away, I'm happy. All right. And if you go down a little further, you have two distinctly looking waveforms, your red waveform and your white waveform. Your numbers are good. You have pulsatility in your motor current, you know, so that, you know, they can walk you through yeah. What may be unfamiliar. Because again, like what situation are we targeting here? It's super low frequency. It's the short flight. It's maybe you haven't had this new awesome transport training yet. And you're like, okay, I need help. What can I do?
Right.
You know, and I think you've mentioned a lot of good things like that. Let me ask you this. This is something that we started doing with a few training programs. And I want to hear your thoughts on it because this really, I think, is targeted for these super low frequency programs. If I gave you some case studies, so I told you we're going to come back and do SIMS, but what if I just gave you some case studies, right? It's completely de-identified. You don't even know what planet they're transporting this patient on, but it was a real transport. And I gave it to you guys and I said, hey, just war game it, you know, just tabletop it.
Yeah.
Your next staff meeting, throw it out there and just do it in little chunks. Like, hey guys, I got a 72-year-old male. He was acute MI, went into cardiogenic shock. Here's his vitals. Here's his labs. What do we think?
Yeah.
You know, and it's just trying to walk through it, right? I mean, do you think that would be beneficial?
Yeah. I would actually, I don't know what your plans with it was, but just give me that. And being the base educator, I could get that out and we could go over that and do everything. However, being as I would like to work through it as well, don't give me the rights and the wrongs. Just let me present it and we all go out and then I give it or connect back with you and we talk about it and you say, you know, you're on the right path there or this and that, but let me make the mistakes as well and do everything. But being as the base educator for my base, that would be absolutely beneficial to get that out to at least our base to start, and then we can work it all the way through.
Yeah, like you mentioned there, you're like, yeah, I'm the base educator. I could help my crews learn this, but like, hey, wait a minute. I'm still a flight provider. I want to learn this too, you know? And that's right, because it's not a guided sim. It doesn't have the debrief items and the talking points. This is just a patient chart.
Right.
So, you know, like an M&M or like a peer review or, you know, like a case presentation that you do with your medical director, like, hey, let's throw it up there. Let's pick it apart. Let's shoot holes in it. Let's put ourselves in that position and say, hey, if I was there as that flight provider, would I have done what they did? And if the answer is no, then let's talk about it. What could they have done different? And this isn't an armchair quarterback, right? We're not here to critique anybody. And again, you don't know who these people are. This, I could give you a case study from your program, and it's so de-identified, you would have no idea. Right. I think we do that with a lot of stuff, right? Like you think of these other low frequency events like needle crikes on a pediatric, or, you know, putting in a chest tube or putting in a central line or whatever that looks like with your clinical capabilities at your program. I think the more you run through it in your head, you know, like I got a good friend of mine who was a flight nurse practitioner, and he worked for an extremely advanced transport program. They did multiple procedures, and they flew, you know, mid-levels and physicians and all this kind of stuff. And his program had the capability to do post-mortem C-sections if they had to, okay? And someone, I was at a conference with him one time, and someone said, well, how many post-mortem C-sections have you done? And he said, probably over 1,000. And they looked at him and they said, are you serious? He goes, yeah, because every time I drive to work, I run through that procedure in my head. Oh. Because if I have to do it one day,
right,
I'm going to be proficient at it. You know, and it's, and that's an extreme example. But I think using that mentality with something like Impella, it's like, hey, I've never flown an Impella patient.
Yeah.
But I guarantee you that if I get an air and purge alarm, I'm going to know exactly what to do because I've walked through that and I practice it at the training and I got to be able to push buttons on the AIC. So yeah, I definitely think there's some value in kind of the hypothetical space, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So Dustin, with such a low frequency event, what does that preparation look like when you get these transports? You know, we talked about how planning and preparation looks differently for just a 5-minute flight, but what do you guys do?
So when we get the call, usually kind of what goes through our head is, okay, it's an Impella transport, or, you know, like in the past, it's been a balloon transport, and that's been a whole process. At least with the Impella, we're a little more comfortable in the fact that, you know, the Impella is not as big and as hard to secure inside the aircraft. So we have that comfortability of knowing. I know some programs might have a what you call a cheater go bag, you know, like, hey, we got this prep for transport. We got these cards and different things like that. Hopefully we can get those, but at this time, no, we don't have anything like that. So we just kind of prep mentally and kind of go on what we remember and hope that there's a rep there in order to kind of guide us. Once we get there, you know, if there's a rep there, they kind of tell us what all needs to be done. Make sure you have this fluid. Make sure it's hanging this way. Other than that, everything's been going good. The flow looks good. And we just make sure all that is good to go. Make sure that they're fairly hemodynamically stable. Do they need to add something to this patient for the transport? Do we need to get another line just in case, you know, different things like that. And then we just prep them for transport. And what that means is a patient is as stable as they're going to get until we get them to the definitive hospital.
Yeah. You mentioned a good point about, you know, what resources or what could you put in this to go bag? You know, we offer a badge buddy just specific for transport providers, mm-hmm. with kind of some of the key things you need to remember, you know, for best practice in this SAT situation. It also has a couple QR codes that link you to some online educational resources. But I think this is a good segue that we can plug the Impella app. So the Impella app has been completely redesigned. It is intended to be that resource or kind of that cognitive aid. You know, you don't do these a lot, like we mentioned. So you pull up the Impella app, and it has, you know, little 30-second bites of information, and they could be downloaded to your phone. So if you're in flight with no connectivity and you're in airplane mode, you can still access a lot of good resources. It has screenshots and images of alarm states and different conditions that can exist with the AIC, you know, troubleshooting. Hey, there's a couple calculators on there for some cardiac formulas and things to kind of give reference on hemodynamic states. So it's a really, really good source of resource. So we also offer what we call our transfer of care checklist. And this should be at all of our centers that implant. And kind of the idea with this is it's a single page document. It's kind of a good landing page to do a lot of your informational stuff about the flight. It makes for good, safe patient handoffs because you can, you know, you could formulate a pretty thorough SBAR from there. But, you know, current medications, infusions, the what P level the Impella is at, what type of Impella device is in, the flows, information about purge. There's an area to write down vital signs. But the big thing for transport providers is at the bottom, we have a pre-departure checklist. So it's little tips and things to remind you, because again, we don't do these a lot. Like, hey, is the purge solution, you know, D5 or at least dextrose and water, you know? You know, do you have the option to bring an extra purge cassette with you? You know, maybe you can borrow one from the sending facility. So if you have anything happen in flight, you can mitigate that. And then on the back of that transfer care checklist is all the most common alarms you're going to see. And not only is it the alarm, but it's also what could be causing it and how you can troubleshoot it. We have information on there about what you're supposed to do in the event that cardiac arrest happens. How do you manage CPR? How do you manage defibrillation? And then again, it also has that 1-800 number to our clinical support center. So that's a really good resource as well. And what we've seen a lot of transport programs do is they'll get that in digital format. So you can get the hard copy from anyone on our training team. You can reach out to your local clinical consultants if you already have an existing relationship, but they also offer that in PDF version. And we have a lot of transport programs that are taking that document and integrating it into their patient care guidelines. So now you're the provider on the aircraft. I'm on my aircraft iPad or whatever device, and I can flip right to it and at my fingertips have everything I need.
Nice. Yeah, that would be wonderful to have.
Thanks for listening to Inside Impella Transport Talks. We're here to support you in recovering hearts and saving lives. For more Impella transport information, visit us at heartrecovery.com/transport. And if you like our podcast, please head to your favorite podcast platform to subscribe and give it a 5-star rating. This podcast is sponsored by Abiomed. The information, findings, and conclusions expressed are those reached independently by the authors.